a fairly substantial library in the Carolingian period might number only a few hundred books. So this was these were not huge libraries. Large university libraries nowadays number in the millions of books, you see. So the scale of activity we have to keep in mind. But nevertheless, there was important work going on. Many monasteries and cathedrals developed what we call a scriptorium, a writing department, where manuscripts were copied. We find that a certain number of the monks in these monasteries were deputed to this particular task, the task of copying books. This is basically what they did, sort of all day, every day, when they weren't eating, sleeping, or gathering in prayer with the other members of the monastic community. They were copying books. Now, as a measure of the work, we have today, in whole or in part, about 180 manuscripts from before the year 800. Now, bear in mind, thousands and thousands of works were written before the year 800, but we only have about 180 surviving books, books themselves, physical objects that are older than the year 800. We have more than 6,000 manuscripts from the 9th century. Most, about 90%, of the literature of classical antiquity, the Latin literature, survives in Carolingian manuscripts. So in a very real way, had these Carolingians not been so sort of fanatical about copying manuscripts, the losses of classical Latin literature would have been huge. And as I suggested at the beginning, there's an irony here because they weren't really interested in the first place in the literature of classical antiquity. All right, schools, schoolmasters, curriculum, books. That was, in a sense, we might say, the infrastructure. Why? What was the point? Well, the movement had, it seems to me, several conscious goals, several conscious outcomes that it sought to attain. Enhancing the intellectual quality of the clergy so as to make them better preachers, better teachers. Now, on the one hand, it was thought that this would make them less susceptible to heresy. On the other hand, it meant that they, through their preaching office, the clergy, through their preaching office, could sort of function as what we might call the Carolingian broadcasting system. This would be the way to get the word out. This would be the way to get the message out. This would be the way to tell sort of people more widely what the Carolingians were doing, what they wanted to do, what their goals were, what their vision was, what their expectations were. Now, it's important to perhaps add a note to the music here, and it's this. Can we talk about literacy in the Carolingian world? Well, clearly the clergy, the vast majority of the members of the clergy, were quite literate. Some members of the royal family were certainly literate. Certain members of the aristocracy almost certainly literate. But as one moves through this society, levels of literacy would have diminished pretty fast. All right. But in earlier times, as indeed in certain respects in our own times, the crucial question is not who could read. It is by what means did ideas circulate? You don't have to read something to know it. How many things do any of us know that we didn't read? How many things do we know that if we were pressed, we'd have a hard time saying where we learned it, how we learned it, why we learned it, when we learned it? All right, so the crucial point that I'm making is that we must view this Carolingian Renaissance as something that was intended to spread fairly widely through the society and that may well have spread fairly widely through the society, which is not at all to make the claim that this was a widely literate society. All right? So in the first place, then, make better teachers, make better preachers. Keep them out of theological trouble and use them, make them able to sort of spread the word. All right. What kind of word, then? Well, the Carolingian ideal of government derived from the Bible, but it also derived from an important book written by Pope Gregory I, Gregory the Great, a book called The Pastoral Rule. Gregory had written that book as a manual for how to be a bishop. But in the course of this book on how to be a bishop, he laid down a notion of ministerial service. And the Carolingians built this up into a notion of ministerial kingship. Now, the Carolingians also were very much inclined to draw parallels between themselves and various kings of the Old Testament. Charlemagne, for example, is routinely referred to as David. But he was sometimes referred to as Solomon. He was sometimes referred to as Josiah. So he was wise, or he was the great scold, you see, or he was the great sort of poet and warrior. Well, that was a bit of a conceit. He wasn't a poet at all. But to call him David was to suggest, you see, that he was something like the psalmist David.